The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Paul Howard is with us because there's a new Ross O'Carroll Kelly book, Don't Look Back in Anger.
Hunger.
The last one. What are you doing?
How many books?
Well, there's been 24 novels. This is the 24th novel in the series, and there were three spin-off books as well. But it's 24 novels and 26 years of writing Ross altogether.
And 1.5 million copies sold.
Yeah.
You must be loaded. That's more than J.K. Rowling nearly, isn't it?
I wish. I don't really sell beyond Ireland. Like, I sell incredibly well in Ireland, and I never take it for granted, and I'm grateful for every single reader I have. But outside of Ireland, they don't really get it. And there's a copy of one of my books in Waterstones in Piccadilly in London. And it's...
How many years has it been there?
It's Normal Sheeple is the book. And it's been there since it was published 6 years ago. And I know it's the same copy because when I saw it, I folded down the second last page, just the tiny bit. See, I'm very, very competitive, you know.
And you go back every time you're in London to check, is it?
Great Irish authors, you know, like Paul Murray and Paul Lynch and John Boyne and Cecilia Hearn selling bucket loads of books in Waterstones in Piccadilly. So it's the same book. And actually, I was there last weekend and I went and had a look. That's how competitive I am.
And all the times you used to slag off Paul Lynch inside in the Sunday Tribune, and he's the guy who ends up winning the Booker.
I never slagged off Paul Lynch. By the way, I love the book. His Booker winning book is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, but let's come back and talk about you. What's prompted this decision?
Well, there was always going to be a last Ross O'Carroll Kelly book. So there was always going to be this day when I was announcing it. And I suppose I've been really busy with other projects the last 2 or 3 years. I've been doing quite a bit of television writing. I worked on Bad Sisters with Sharon Horgan.
Are you on the second series?
I'm on this. Yeah, I finished that. It's actually wrapped and it's going to be...
It's coming out in November, isn't it?
In November.
I'm really looking forward to it. I'm sure you're probably not allowed to say anything about it.
I've signed all sorts of non-disclosure agreements, which my wife is a solicitor, and she's the one who usually reminds me about my legal obligations.
Because I couldn't see where a second series would go of Bad Sisters.
Well, it was a big challenge because I think I can say this, that the first season was based on a Belgian show called Clan, and it was so we had a model. Now, it is quite different. In some ways, substantially different to the original.
Okay, because it was brilliant. Bad Sisters is terrific.
It was great.
Brilliantly written, brilliantly directed, brilliantly acted.
But so for the second season, there was no second season of the Belgian show. So we had to dream this one up, which is great. I mean, to sit in a room with the writers who worked on that second series, you just learn so much, you know. And I'm not used to, since our days working together in newspapers, I haven't really collaborated much since then. Like, I've done plays, but when I write a play, I generally just give it to the director and let him work it out with the actors. So this was truly collaborative. You're sitting around a boardroom table and firing out ideas. What about this?
What a fun you must have had doing that.
But it's work as well, and it's quite intense. And Sharon is just, she's great fun, but she's very serious about what she does. And so when you're in the room, you work. And while there is fun, you know, you could follow in plots and try to keep all these storylines in your head and characters in your head can really give you a headache if you're not.
And were you simultaneously writing your last Ross O'Carroll Kelly?
No, I wasn't. Not at that time. It dovetailed quite nicely. I finished working on my episode of Bad Sisters. And then I went straight into the final Ross book. But that's it, really. I mean, I've got a lot of work on. I've got a couple of other TV projects I'm working on as well. And I want to, you know, explore that and give that more of my time. The Ross books take up probably about 7 months of my year. And it's a big time commitment. But on top of that as well, I've been writing Ross since I was 28 years of age. And I'm 54, my next birthday. So it is the greater part of my adult life has been spent with this.
You grew up with Ross.
Idiot's voice in my head. And maybe it's time I woke up in the morning and thought in a different voice.
Yeah, but hold on. You see, what's interesting, because I remember when you started at 300 words in the sports pages of the Sunday Tribune before the late Paddy Murray came into me one day and said, this has to go on the back page of the main section.
Yeah.
This is too good to be left in the sports section. No, I believe everything in the sports section is really good and you don't necessarily lift things out. But we put it on the back page, about 800 words, I think it would have been around. And it was an enormous hit, as it deserved to be.
And it went mainstream. And that was Paddy had the foresight. Like, Paddy knew this isn't about sport. And it was in the early days. It was about following this idiot kid's rugby dream.
And it was born out of a bit of anger on your part as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, a huge amount of anger. I had a massive chip on my shoulder about class growing up, especially in my teenage years, you know. So I didn't have huge exposure to those sort of rugby types. Rugby is much more mainstream now, I think, you know, like...
It is.
You know, every...
I think you even like rugby now.
I would watch it, like, I wouldn't turn it off if it was on the telly, you know, but...
is that your admission that you like it?
That's as far as I'm going to go. But, but it wasn't mainstream. It was a game, certainly in Dublin, it was a game for kids who went to elite secondary schools. And so I didn't really interact with it until I became a sports writer. And, you know, I covered this school's rugby match and... I heard this kid say to his dad, I don't give a bleep how you think I played, just crack open the wallet. And that became that's essentially the relationship between Charles and Ross. And it all started with that relationship, with the dad who idolizes his son and the son who just thinks his dad is a walking ATM, essentially. And so that's where that's...
Yeah, but how quickly did you actually start to like the characters and eventually love them?
It took a few years. It's funny because somebody said to me that recently they discovered, like reading the Ross series, the first books he was the most hateful character in the books, and now he's actually the only likable character. And I think that hasn't happened by accident. I think I've grown to like the character over time. I've loved the character over time. I suppose it comes from understanding, you know. And I wrote a book called We Need to Talk About Ross, and it was a series of mock interviews with all the characters in Ross's world, and that really, really helped me kind of get the origin story for Ross, why he is like he is, that he grew up in this world where his dad basically told him he was the second coming of Christ, and, you know, he meets this rugby coach.
I thought there was only Cork mothers who said that about their children.
Yeah, Cork is full of them, of course. Yeah. And this rugby coach at school who tells him he's going to be the greatest rugby player who ever played, greatest Irish player of all time. And then a mother who's not really interested in him except for the kind of social status that she gets from being the mother of the captain of the rugby team.
Because she got to wear the hat and the presentation of the trophy that lends the senior cup.
On Paddy's Day. And so I started to understand him a bit more then. But it took a while. When I look back on those early books, like The Miseducation of Rossa Carroll Kelly, which was the one that we printed in the Sunday Tribune, and which was based on
The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill. That was the first punning title.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's got a cultural reference in a title. And those copies of that book, you probably remember, were blocking every single emergency exit.
I still have them at a couple
at
home.
Well, they're worth £100.
I know, but that's why I'm keeping it very carefully. Yeah,
and I pulped 4,000 of them, by the way.
I remember.
when I look back on that book, I can feel the anger coming off those pages. I was very angry about, you know, they are about class, and I had a huge chip on my shoulder about it. And when I look at that book, I don't know if it's funny. It's kind of interesting. I think I started to concentrate more on the comedy as time went on. I know it's satirical, but I'm not sure if people laughed at it. I think people read it and sort of ticked off the truisms in it. In their heads, they kind of, oh yeah, yeah, my friend Tiernan is like that. Kind of, you know, that was the humor in it. Whereas later on, I was going for belly laughs. But in the early days, it was just about really grinding that axe.
But you've done brilliantly with it. I mean, you've come to love it yourself, haven't you? You love doing it.
No book ever felt like a chore. And usually at the start of the summer, I'd sit down with Rachel Pierce, my editor, and we'd draw up the storylines for the next Ross book, and we'd spend about 3 months batting them back and forth. And Rachel's thing was always, if you're going to write a series for this long, your ambition every single time was this book has to be funnier than the last book. So we always measured story. Is that storyline funnier than that one? Is it funny? You know, and characters had to be better. They had to be better drawn. And I'm not saying the books got better as we went along, But it was the base camp of our ambition that every book we should set out to write a better book than the one before.
I'm delighted you've mentioned Rachel because she's a terrific editor. She's done four of my books. She's working on my current book as well, that I'm writing at present, which of course is entirely different to Ross O'Carroll Kelly.
Yeah.
But your own future writing ambitions, apart from television, you did a fantastic book on the life of this Beatles song I heard, the news of Dara Brown.
Yeah.
And you've also written, even recently, back for the Irish Times, sports journalism.
You returned. Right, you spotted that.
Yeah. Terrific piece. Are you going to go back to doing that?
I don't know. It was really nice to go back and do it, even to prove that I still could, because I've been writing mostly in one voice for 20 years, and it's Ross's voice. And you do wonder sometimes, I wonder, can I still write? Like, you know, I read Paul Lynch's book, Prophet Song, and I loved it. And I was reading it thinking, I wonder, could I write as well as this, you know? Could I take on a style like this? And I don't think I'd ever write a serious literary book. But I'd like to, you know, take on another nonfiction project like the Tara Brown book.
You should.
I have an idea for another fiction project, which it's not going to be next year, but it's almost certainly going to be the year after that. And I've been tipping away on that for about a year. I'm just looking forward to kind of doing other things.
One last thing. One of our colleagues died this week, Nell McCafferty, because you'd have worked alongside Nell for many years in the Tribune as well. She was some character.
She was brilliant. She was fantastic. One of the great joys of working in the Tribune was that the little library we had at the front of the building, and all of the old McGills were in there, and they were in these kind of bound volumes, leather-bound volumes. And it was great to pick those up if you had an hour or two spare and read back through like writers that I admired when I wanted to be a journalist as a teenager, people like Jean Kerrigan and especially Nell. And like last night I went online and I bought her book about the district courts, the collection of her district court writing, which was just mind-blowing at the time. I remember reading those articles at the time, and I paid about 80 quid for this book because I'm dying to read it again. She was fantastic, but she was also her presence around the place, you know. She'd come in for those editorial meetings. She wasn't at every editorial meeting, but the ones she was at, the room was just about 20% more serious because Nell was in it, you know. She was one of those people who she had an aura. You know, I was frankly terrified of her, and in a good way though, you know, because I found her intellect quite intimidating, and if you wrote something that she didn't agree with, she'd tell you at usually at high volume.
Last night, I actually went back and read quite a lot of her stuff in the Tribune during the years when I was editor, and again, so struck of how well she wrote, how simply she wrote, how descriptively she wrote about going to things like funerals or going to a house when somebody just died and describing what the people were doing and it was just remarkable. Absolutely.
The thing
remarkable
about Nell was she liked people and she engaged with people, and you never really felt when you read, you know, when Nell went to, like you said, a funeral or something, you never felt like Nell was there to fill out the word count, that she really engaged with people, and that just leapt out of her copy, that she met people, you know, she really met people.
God, we've gone off in a different direction. We're talking about the great Nell McCafferty, but also the great Ross O'Carroll Kelly books. The last one in the series has just been published. Don't Look Back in Ungar.
Ungar?
Ungar.
Ungar.
You could do it way better. Thank you, Paul Arden.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30. Today FM.